We have people negotiating for us who are political hacks. They're the best political hacks in the world. They get their jobs because they give campaign contributions.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
7:11 in the morning, the first non-nude Playboy magazine is out. Playboy magazine without naked women. Well, it's called Reader's Digest.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys just read the articles anyway, don't you?
Yeah. So, just so you know, it's out and available everywhere. It's still available everywhere.
Is Playboy still as big as it once was?
Okay. No. You know why? Because, I don't know if you know this, there's a lot of naked people on the internet.
Ah.
If you want to see naked people, you just go on the internet. They just pop up on you.
To Google naked people?
You could Google Blender and naked people show up.
That's true. Or just go to any of your spam emails, and there they are.
Yeah, it's all over. It's quite something. David Axelrod's book, Believer, My 40 Years in Politics, a New York Times bestseller, is out in paperback now and out and available everywhere. And we'll talk to Mr. Axelrod here in just a second. What seems to be the problem, Mr. Axelrod?
Mr. Axelrod's calling right now.
Ah, okay.
I highly recommend this book. It's really good.
It is good.
If you like, well, politics in general, but Chicago politics, because there's names in there, you know, Stroger and Claypool and Mosley Braun. This is a really good book.
One of the things that I think is really interesting about politics to me, and if you dive down, you don't even have to be a goofball for this stuff like I am. But one of the things I find really interesting about it is you can be really close to the process and get it right, or you could be really close to the process and get it wrong. And I'm going to take this up with Mr. Axelrod here. David, good morning. Nice to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you.
And Believer, My 40 Years in Politics. Get it in paperback. Get two copies. You're careless. You lose the first one.
Thank you.
Add David Axelrod all over social media. I was just referencing how even the most inside insiders can sometimes get the call right or wrong. And this comes from two things. One is the chunk on John Edwards in the book, which your wife seems to have rescued you from.
Yes, yes.
And then I'm looking at the monitors here, and I see Barbara Bush, a wonderful woman. Really like Barbara Bush.
Yes.
And she's out campaigning with Jeb yesterday, a campaign that I think is going to go down in his history, along with Rudy Giuliani's, as one of the great misses in the last 25 years.
Well, we can have that discussion on Wednesday, because I think Tuesday is his really last chance to break through here. He's planted his flag in New Hampshire, and if he can finish ahead of Marco Rubio and John Kasich and Chris Christie and sort of seize that establishment lane in the Republican race, then he will have salvaged his campaign. But I wouldn't bet the ranch on that.
Yeah, same here. And it's really stunning how badly the miss has happened here, because this is more than just, well, Kasich's not connecting either, Christie's not connecting. It's a non-establishment campaign. Jeb Bush, clearly on the Republican side, is, if he's not the most qualified for the job, he's right there. And he has run just an absolutely terrible campaign.
He has... sometimes it's timing. I mean, there's no doubt that he hasn't been a great candidate. There's some people who are just better office holders than candidates. And I also think it's timing. You know, I kind of believe in this replica I write about in the book. One of the things that encouraged me to believe that Obama could win in 2008 was that people generally choose, and particularly the other party, the antithesis of the person in the White House. And he was the antithesis of George W. Bush in his approach to politics and in his bearing and so on, not just his policies. I think Donald Trump is sort of the antithesis of Barack Obama, which is why he's done so well. Jeb Bush, I don't agree with him on a lot of stuff, but he's a thoughtful guy. He gets asked questions like, what are you going to do? You know, other guys are saying they're going to rip up the Iran treaty. And what are you going to do? And he says, well, first I'm going to appoint my cabinet, then I'm going to talk to my allies and so on. Well, that's what you would want a president to do, but that's not what Republican voters want to hear this year. And, so I think in terms of temperament, in terms of approach, he just picked the wrong time to run.
Yeah, and how do you see that coming? In the book, we got to do a quick traffic, and we'll come back with David Axelrod. And again, book is David Axelrod, Believer, My 40 Years in Politics. Really terrific behind-the-scenes look at the at David Axelrod's life, his career, his family, and all of that. But you make the point in the book, without your wife, you could have maybe aligned yourself with the wrong pony in the wrong race, and your wife maybe saved you from a John Edwards candidacy. So we'll talk about
well.
Well, I'm for sake of the tease. So
okay. Yeah, let's go to traffic.
Yeah, let's go to traffic and come back. Come back with the John Edwards story in just a second. At David Axelrod on social media. The book again is Believer: My 40 Years in Politics. I think the John Edwards story is germane because it and really an interesting chunk out of the book as well, because most of us who think we know have gotten this race so wrong. So tell me the John Edwards story.
Well, you know, a slight edit to your depiction of it is that my wife did. In fact, I went and met the Edwards. They had lost their media consultant. They wanted someone for their presidential race. This was in 2003 for 2004, and I met with both Edwardses for 2 hours, and I came back and I kind of reported on the conversation with my wife, and. She listened and she said, "Don't do the race." And I said, "Why not?" And they had imparted some stories about their lives, and you know, and I shared them with Susan. And she said, "There's something wrong with this picture." And the edit I have to make is I didn't listen to her advice. I was so eager to be in the race, in the presidential race, and I thought there was a slot for a populist candidate, and Edwards could fill that slot. And I drove right through my wife's yellow light, and it wasn't a very good experience for me. You know, it wasn't the 2008 experience that the Edwards folks had, which turned into disaster and tragedy. But it wasn't a good relationship, and I came out of that race thinking if I ever did a presidential race again, it was only going to be with someone with whom I had a close, trusting, unbreakable bond, and in whom I deeply, deeply believed. And so I thought I was going to sit out the 2008 campaign until Barack Obama decided to run. And then it was clear where I needed to be.
But I think your influence on that race and David, the Davids, as they're called, who have such a good yin and yang through all of that, your experience on it is really interesting to me, because I look at a guy like Trump, and I think he's not listening to anybody. And we talk about how guys get overmanaged and overanalyzed, and they sound like robots in these campaigns. And he can't.
You wouldn't accuse Donald Trump of that.
No, but I just wonder, is he listening to anybody? And what does it say about his success, at least in the polls so far, if he's not?
I remember Bernie Ebtin, who ran for mayor against Harold Washington in 1983. He was a state legislator, Republican state legislator, and he was asked about Jim Thompson, who was governor at the time, and whether he spoke with Thompson or advised Thompson. And he said, "Thompson only speaks to God, and sometimes when God calls, Thompson isn't in." So I think there's an element of that with Donald Trump, and I think he paid a price for it in Iowa, because
right.
Ted Cruz was very well organized. Trump went in, I think, seduced by polls. You know, he loves to recite polls. The polls were not able to account for the superior organization that Ted Cruz had. And, you know, Trump got inveigled into a fight that he ended up losing. And it damaged his brand, because his brand is he's a winner. America's going to win. He always wins. Well, he didn't win that one. So I think there is a price to be paid for this sort of improvisational nature of the Trump campaign. That said, I think he's poised to have a good day on Tuesday, and I think he's going to be with us for a while. I don't think they're going to cancel the series yet.
David, I wanted to get your thoughts. That is good.
You know what they need to do? They need to give him a love interest and a cute neighbor kid.
All right. And an annoying best friend,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
David,
this could be a bad time for a love interest.
Exactly right.
Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Love the book. Yeah. I love Chicago politics, but I love the references, you know, Stroger, Mosley, Braun, the insights. But I want to get your thoughts on a couple local issues. First of all, Forrest Claypool. I know he's your good friend and former business partner, but wanted to get your thoughts on what he's dealing with now with CPS and also about Rahm Emanuel in either order. And if you think the mayor, if you expected all the backlash that he's really received in the city over the past few months.
Well, let me deal with Forrest first. He was my business partner. We first met in the Paul Simon campaign in 1984. There isn't anybody in public life who I respect more than Forrest, and I don't think there's a better public administrator, and I've seen government at every level. I've never met a better public administrator. He reformed the Chicago Park District in the 1990s in a really profound way. He came in, the CTA was a mess 5 years ago. He cleaned up the CTA and its finances. And, you know, I'm gratified that he's taken on the school system because we so need a functioning, fiscally sound but excellent school system. And someone needs to sort that out. But it's, you know, we're obviously at a very difficult juncture. And, I'm rooting for him, and everybody should root for him because the kids, the teachers, everyone has an investment in righting the finances of the school system and making sure that we move forward on a sound footing. In terms of Rahm, you asked, did he expect? I don't think anybody can expect what's occurred. I have a lot of sympathy for him because so much has washed up on his doorstep, including all these fiscal problems that are the consequence of years of action and inaction by lots of different people, and now he has to confront all of that. On the police issue, I wrote in the book about my first real job here in Chicago. Newspaper job was at the Hyde Park Herald when I was a columnist as a kid in college. And the first column I ever wrote as an 18-year-old in 1973 was about Mayor Richard J. Daley, Congressman Ralph Metcalf from the South Side, and their clash over police brutality and community, really. This has been a problem that has been with us through generations. I work for Harold Washington, Harold, there was nobody on the planet who cared more about this issue than Harold. He was a protege of Ralph Metcalf. And John Burge was flourishing during that period. I think if Harold knew about that, he would have stopped it. We've had seven mayors since I've been here, and this problem has plagued. But it's come to a head now in a really serious way, and hopefully it can be an inflection point so that we once and for all confront that issue and restore police-community relations, because we can only fight crime effectively if we do that.
Well, and change for the sake of change is not always the answer either. There's a lot of things you could go after Rahm Emanuel on and say, I want these done better, and I want more transparency, and I want more of an open relationship, and I want to hear what's going on. And Rahm, you're not friendly, and I don't like you so much. But my question would be, okay, now what? It's the same thing with him removing the police commissioner. Okay, now what? We feel better for the 10 minutes after a change happens, but then what?
Well, I think this is a very important question. I agree with you, and it does point to one tangible thing here that we have to watch. I do think Rahm has a very big decision ahead of him in terms of the next police superintendent, given the kinds of problems that we've had. And I don't mean just problems in police conduct in the community. And let me just say this parenthetically. I was a nightside reporter at the Chicago Tribune, and I used to cover police stories every night. And I saw some of what we've seen in terms of police abuse of power. But mostly what I saw was heroism. I saw people do extraordinary things, police officers, to protect people, to serve people. And we need that. And so what in dealing with the folks who are guilty of misconduct, and we should deal with them, we should deal with them harshly, let's not impugn all those who do a great job. So his decision there is important. But your larger point, Steve, is right as well. Listen, we've got big problems as a community, and what we need to do is rally together and confront them. And, we can, what's happened here is I think there are folks who, for their own political reasons, have sought to inflame here. And Rahm's not blameless. Rahm, I think, has at times not made the connection that he needs to make with people. And, I have no doubt about that. But I also know him to be a very hardworking, determined guy. And he, more than anyone else, knows that, this is on his account now and he needs to solve these problems. And, I think the best thing we can do is put his determination to work here and try and pull together as a community instead of ripping ourselves apart.
Well said by you, sir. David Axelrod, believer, my 40 years in politics. I'm going to have you talk to Kevin off the air because we need to get a celebrity Super Bowl pick from you as well as we're making a list. And by the way, you've won nothing. But I will throw in a bonus plug. Believer, my 40 years in politics. It's a New York Times bestseller. It really is a terrific book. And again, get two copies. You're careless. You lose the first one. I hope you have a great weekend. I look forward to talking to you again.
I do as well. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks. Hold the line. It's David Axelrod, at David Axelrod on social media.
It's a great book.
Yeah, very honest,
I really
honest
like
too.
The book. Yeah.
Very honest.
Great insights into a lot of people.